From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The name Monsanto has long been linked to the proliferation of genetically modified crops and pesticides, and also for skirting ethical bounds in order to push its products. Now a new book by a veteran journalist lays bare Monsanto's dirty deeds, specifically over the promotion and sale of its main pesticide, Roundup, whose ingredient glyphosate is a dangerous toxin. In her book, Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science, former Reuters journalist Carrie Gillum tells a story that she's been researching for decades about how Monsanto has worked to suppress growing evidence of harm from the use of glyphosate, which is now the most widely used chemical in agricultural history. Gillum also exposes how government agencies and scientists have, over the years, helped Monsanto in its quest for profits over the health of people and the planet. Carrie Gillum is a veteran journalist, researcher, and writer with more than 25 years of experience covering corporate America, food, and farming. She's a former senior correspondent for Reuters' International News Service and the director of research for the nonprofit consumer group U.S. Right to Know. And she now joins me to discuss her book, Whitewash. Welcome to the program, Carrie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I understand you just returned from a hearing at the European Parliament where you shared testimony about your work exposing Monsanto and its pesticide. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in our conversation. Let's start with what Roundup is. A lot of people who are familiar with Monsanto, and a lot of people in our audience are, probably more so than the general public in the U.S., they've heard of Roundup, and maybe not glyphosate, but Roundup, which is the main product that Monsanto sells. Tell us the history of this product and glyphosate and how Monsanto and why Monsanto brought it to market.
Sure. Thank you. Yes. Glyphosate, you're right. It's not a household word. It is in my household, but probably not many others. But this is sort of the revolutionary weed killer, the revolutionary herbicide that Monsanto brought to market in 1974. Monsanto had largely been sort of an industrial chemical company. Up until that time, they produced such things as 2,4-D, which was an ingredient, you know, in Agent Orange. They were a major supplier of Agent Orange to our federal government during the war. They had PCBs, a lot of different products. But in the 1970s, they really wanted a revolutionary type of herbicide, something that would be safe and effective, that farmers could use as well as homeowners and others. And they were successful in coming up with this chemical. And they pushed it. It is known most commonly as Roundup. A lot of people have that in their garage. Farmers use it prolifically on, over 100 different food crops that we grow here in North America and are grown elsewhere around the world.
So it's sold in the shelves of landscaping stores to the general public, but it's also sold to farmers in big quantities for crop use.
Right. Yes, very definitely. And as Monsanto's patent was expiring on this ingredient, this chemical, it was expiring in the year 2000, and Monsanto came up with a very brilliant strategy to roll out these genetically engineered crops, soybeans, corn, and others that were designed specifically to be able to withstand being sprayed by this herbicide. The weeds would die, but the corn would not, and the soybeans would not. And this was a very, lucrative sort of discovery and new product line for Monsanto because it locked in really farmers' use of glyphosate and Roundup on these new seeds, these new crops. And glyphosate use surged dramatically after the introduction of these glyphosate-tolerant crops.
So just to be clear, essentially Monsanto created a market monopoly for itself with the introduction of GMOs. And there's been a lot of controversy around GMOs. A lot of people are very skeptical of GMOs. But for the purposes of our conversation here, it seems as though the most important aspect is that Monsanto essentially introduced a series of crops that were glyphosate resistant. Everything else succumbed to glyphosate, but their crops didn't, thus ensuring that farmers who wanted to grow these crops had to use their and only their pesticide.
Well, the farmers could choose to use a different glyphosate-based herbicide if they wished to after the patent expired. Other chemical companies do make glyphosate-based herbicides, but Monsanto put in place a number of incentives and guarantees and contract clauses that made it very advantageous for farmers and distributors to sell those as packaged sorts of deals. And you're right, Monsanto took a very big position in the market because of that strategic move. They were investigated by the Justice Department for those dealings at one point, and they made some changes in the way they were bundling the herbicides and the seeds together. But, you know, it's made them billions of dollars in the seed sales of the herbicide-tolerant crops and in the herbicide itself.
And so I understand that Monsanto doesn't just use glyphosate in Roundup, its main pesticide. It also adds this ingredient called POEA. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there are other ingredients, obviously, in these what they call formulated products. Roundup is a formulated product. It's not straight glyphosate. So there are other things like, as you referenced, POEA, which is a surfactant. It essentially helps glyphosate adhere to the leaves of a plant where it can be absorbed and get in and do its work, you know. So POEA has been found to be particularly toxic, maybe more toxic in the eyes of some researchers than glyphosate. And when you combine the two, that's where you see some real problems, according to some research that has been done on this. Now, our government, the EPA, and many other regulatory agencies around the world don't require extensive testing of the toxicity problems or the toxicity issues of formulated products. They look only at the active ingredient, which is glyphosate. And that's been a real concern and a real problem by many people around the world, because of course, nobody really uses glyphosate by itself. It's always in these combinations, in these formulated products.
So POEA being polyethoxylated taloamine, POEA. Glyphosate has been touted as safe enough to drink, but of course, in conjunction with these other chemicals, as you mentioned, there are some serious problems. Let's get to the heart of your story that you write about in Whitewash. What has Monsanto known about the safety or danger of these products, of Roundup? And what has it, as per your research, kept from the public, using some very, let's just say, creative tactics?
Very creative tactics, right. What we have seen, what the documents show us, we've obtained, myself and my colleagues at U.S. Right to Know, have obtained literally thousands of documents from internal regulatory agencies, and we have access to Monsanto's own internal emails and other records from litigation that has recently bubbled up surrounding Roundup and glyphosate. But what it shows is that Monsanto, at every turn, when there have been concerns showing up in research with genotoxicity or other issues, Monsanto has worked very hard not to explore or expand on that research, but to hide it, cover it up, manipulate it, change it. We've seen them pay, you know, scientists and talk about how they will essentially ghostwrite. Monsanto uses the word ghostwrite. Our scientists will write the papers, but we'll pay these other scientists to put their names on them.
And tell us about the evidence that you have that this sort of thing is a routine thing that goes on. This was part of what you testified about in front of the European Parliament, October 11th, 2017, about how Monsanto basically will write papers about its products and then figure out whose name to put on those papers, basically to get it legitimacy.
Well, I mean, this is what they say in their own internal emails. You know, they talk about, all right, we need a paper that's going to support us on this. It's going to defend glyphosate or Roundup. And, you know, we can ghostwrite it. Who should we get to be the author for it? The outside independent expert. Who should we get? How much is that person going to cost? You know, you see things like that go on. There's a whole long laundry list of examples. The key one that has sort of been talked about is there was a very important study that's been cited by regulators around the world, a review paper in the year 2000, And again, regulators around the world have looked to this for guidance and information and insight on the safety of the chemical. Well, we see Monsanto talking internally about how they ghost wrote that paper. We see another Monsanto executive bragging about ghostwriting another paper in 2015 that looked to be independent and written by an outside scientist. So, you know, that's just, again, one example. There are also, we also have found information about research studies that Monsanto did that found rare tumors in mice, a host of problems and pointers that that indicate glyphosate could cause cancer. And what you see is Monsanto trying to change the assessments and trying to change the way that regulators look at those studies.
This is so reminiscent of what ExxonMobil knew about climate change decades ago and then worked to suppress that information. Let's talk about the human cost of using glyphosate, using Roundup and Monsanto's products, which is so important to underscore the impacts of this very, very common pesticide use. He's quite severe. You tell the story in your book of Jack McCall, a farmer in Cambria. Who was Jack McCall and what happened to him?
Yeah, so well, Jack McCall was a farmer in Cambria, California. He and his wife, Terry, have a beautiful farm there, you know, and grandchildren and pets. And it was just quite a beautiful little citrus farm. They also grew avocados and he sold them at local farmers markets and things. And he didn't want to use pesticides on his farm. He was kind of grew up as a hippie and was very natural, you know, in his food production. But he believed Roundup was safe and that Roundup would not cause any problems. So he did use that pretty prolifically around his farm for years. And he came down with non-Hodgkin lymphoma and died a pretty sudden and gruesome death right after Christmas in 2015. And his wife now, Terry, is one of the plaintiffs among about 3,000 who are suing Monsanto now, alleging Roundup caused them or their loved ones to suffer from non-Hodgkin lymphoma.
So the use of Roundup is not restricted to the United States, right? Carrie, let's also talk about the extent of the issue. This is a globally used pesticide. So give us a sense of the extent of its use and also a historical context. Has there ever been a pesticide used as widely as Roundup?
Roundup is considered to be, glyphosate.
Glyphosate, right, the main ingredient. Yeah.
To be the most widely used agrochemical in history, in the world, around the world. Its use, as I said, skyrocketed with the introduction of genetically engineered crops, but it's also used in conjunction with crops that are not genetically engineered, from tea to tobacco, you know, and in vineyards and wineries and in orange groves, and as well as, you know, on row crops, corn and soybeans and cotton and canola and sugar beets and you know, it's used in the production of almonds. it's sprayed on oats. It's sprayed on wheat.
It's found in our water and our bloodstream, right?
It's found very commonly in human urine. Yes, if you have your urine sample, you probably will have glyphosate weed killer in your urine. It's made its way into, you know, multiple food products. It's been found, you know, in honey, for instance, even organic honey and oatmeal, baby oatmeal that you serve to your children. Bread products.
And this is a really important issue. You said organic honey. By consuming organic food, you can't avoid glyphosate, you can't avoid Roundup, because it's so widely used that it drifts into the water that's sprayed on plants. I mean, it's basically everywhere now, right?
Glyphosate is found to be pretty pervasive. Yes, government researchers have found it, you know, in many, many, many water supplies, including in some drinking, you know, water municipal supplies. It's found in the soil, as I said, in our bodies, in our food. It's pervasive.
So we have a situation right now then where you have U.S. regulators super lax about testing or requiring testing, not just with the advent of the Trump administration. The United States has a long history of waiting for companies to be held accountable for having caused harm before before they ask them to pull their products, rather than you know, first proving that they are safe. The precautionary principle turned over on its head. But now we have at the EPA someone like Scott Pruitt. You have people around government agencies that are even less likely than usual to hold Monsanto accountable. Let's talk about the stories of how Monsanto has used government, used the revolving door with government, and in order to be able to remain unaccountable.
Well, I mean, there are a couple easy examples I can offer. There are many longer ones. Mm-hmm. But in the documents, you do see one in particular that I wrote recently about an agency called ATSDR, which is part of the Human Health Services Department, wanted to do a review of glyphosate safety, wanted to take a look at that. Monsanto really did not want them to do that. They say in their communications they're afraid that the ATSDR will find harm or safety issues with glyphosate. So they go to some friendly folks at the EPA that they had relationships with, three top officials actually that we know of, there could be more, and ask for help in making that review go away. And these agency officials were quite happy to help out and were successful in making that go away. So, I mean, that's just one example. There's another one of an official who's actually being investigated now. His name is Jess Rowland, who was with EPA for quite some time. Monsanto considered him a friend, talked in internal communications about how useful they thought he could be. He was instrumental in declaring glyphosate to be safe in terms of cancer causation. And he left the agency in April of 2016, shortly after a very mysterious, actually it was May of 2016, shortly after a very mysterious leak of information that Monsanto used happily. And we now know that Jess Rowland is working in some respect for the chemical industry, although we don't know how because he won't say publicly. Hmm. But
Carrie, you know, the subtitle to your book is The Corruption of Science. How have scientists also enabled, you know, I'm assuming just a small number of scientists, but how have scientists and science been perverted and used by Monsanto to justify its claims of safety?
Right. Well, you know, as I said, we have the discussions of ghostwriting. Yeah. We also see in the documents sort of an army of secret soldiers around the world that Monsanto has enlisted to help them sort of push this message of glyphosate safety both to the public and to policymakers. And you can see internally they talk about they don't want people to know that Monsanto is behind this. They want these people to appear to be independent.
In some cases, even bloggers, right?
Well, yes. I mean, people who appear on websites, people who write for magazines, scientists who give lectures or presentations around the world, you can see Monsanto writing the presentations, writing the articles, instructing them on what their policy briefs should say. We have some examples where a professor from the University of Florida, essentially an article that appeared to be from him on a website, was written word for word by the public relations firm that worked for Monsanto. So, you know, you see things like that. It's deceptive. It's designed to, you know, to deceive, nothing more. And then you also see, conversely, an attack on independent scientists. You see Monsanto using its machine to try to discredit actual independent scientists who are saying that the research shows evidence of harm. And they've done that with multiple scientists on multiple occasions.
You know, we talked about Jack McCall, but there are so many examples around the world. In India, there's been the epidemic of farmer suicides, etc. All of these are very much the sort of fallout from this deception that Monsanto and other companies, but led by Monsanto, have helped usher in this widespread use of pesticide. How does an ordinary farmer or just a consumer citizen distinguish the good science from the bad on Monsanto? Because if you can't tell apart someone who's being paid off by Monsanto from an independent scientist, then you're in trouble. Because, you know, I mean, we have this whole discussion around fake news. You have corporations like Monsanto essentially pushing fake science, and it's really hard to tell it apart.
Well, I mean, they certainly have set up what we call false fronts. They have a number of nonprofit organizations that sound like they're science organizations that push out propaganda to journalists and policymakers and others. I mean,
with
you're right.
Graphics and information, you know, the infographics, which we've seen.
Right. Again, appearing to be, you know, authentic and independent and scientific. So it's very difficult. It's for the public to discern between the authentic and the manipulated. I would, you know, I think you go to what you know to be the most true, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, the World Health Organization's cancer experts, the top scientists from around the world who are independent, examined the research and declared this chemical to be a probable human carcinogen. You know, that is a pretty important declaration. California has followed suit, of course, by listing glyphosate as a known carcinogen. But, you know, Monsanto and the rest of the industry are battling back and trying to discredit these scientists as much as they can. So it's a pretty bitter battle right now over this chemical.
If U.S. regulators cannot be counted upon, at least at the federal level, to, you know, curb the use of this toxic pesticide, what about Europe? Can Monsanto's global promotion of this dangerous product be thwarted by more, you know, responsible regulatory agencies, say, in Europe and elsewhere?
You know, it is heartening having just returned from Europe for a couple of different trips over there recently. It's very heartening to see the level of interest and dialogue and discussion over this issue. You have a much more, as you said earlier, precautionary principle in Europe. The policymakers and members of the public are very concerned about the health of their environment as well as the health of themselves and their families. And they understand, I guess, the significance and the importance of this particular chemical, as well as many others. And so there is a very big debate right now in Europe, and glyphosate authorization expires in December in Europe. So they right now are trying to vote, get a vote together on whether or not to reauthorize. Here in the U.S., the EPA seems at least on course to just continue, you know, to allow the use that it has for glyphosate.
Well, Carrie, I want to thank you so much for the work you've done and for spending this time with us. Give out a website or two that people can find out more information both about your book and the research on glyphosate and Monsanto.
Sure, yes, thank you. So my own website, www.carriegillam.com, more about my book and myself and my articles. You can also then go to the NGO, the nonprofit, U.S. Right to Know, which is usrtk.org. And we look at a lot of different things, sugar, you know, and obesity, food and agriculture, not just glyphosate. There's a lot more there for consumers who care about, you know, what they're eating.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us again. We'll post links to those websites from our site later. Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you.
My guest has been Carrie Gillam, veteran journalist, researcher, and writer with more than 25 years' experience covering corporate America, food, and farming, former senior correspondent for Reuters' International News Service, and she's also the director of research for the U.S. nonprofit consumer group, U.S. Right to Know. We've been discussing her new book, Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.